You were made for friendships. And you were made for friendships because you were made in the image of a relational God who has spent eternity past delighting in the fellowship he gets to have with the three persons of the Trinity. And this God has now created you and saved you for the purpose of having fellowship with you for his glory. And so you were made for friendships. In fact, the case could be made that the entire work of redemption is the story of friendship. And that the purpose of our lives is friendship. Friendship with God and having friendship with God, having friendship and communion with those around us, with believers. An author puts redemptive history in this way. He says this, God walked with us in friendship in the garden. We walked away, that's the fall, and now he's befriending us again. And he's doing that as he draws us back to himself through Christ. And I love that. I love that. So you were made for friendships. First of all, friendship with God. And then secondly, having friendships, friendship with God, friendship with believers. And isn't that just true, practically speaking? You guys know that your friendships are part of what makes life wonderful or terrible if you don't have good friendships. Some of the happiest and wisest people in the world are those who have great friendships, and at the same time, sadly, some of the saddest and most depressed people in the world are those who never invested the time to cultivate these deep, life-giving, life-producing, wisdom-generating, joy-igniting friendships. Having friends can make life wonderful if you have the right friends, and having no friends or having the wrong friends can make life terrible. In fact, some time ago, I found out that there's this thing called the epidemic of loneliness in America that is simply growing and growing and growing. People with no friends. If any of you are looking for a job, there's this organization I found called Rent a Friend. And you can actually get paid $10 to $50 an hour to be rented by someone to be their friend. Isn't that funny? And why? Because people have no friends. And so you get paid $10 to $50 an hour to take your friend to the museum and go to the grocery store and go to the movies and so on because of this epidemic of loneliness. Which proves, again, that you were made for friendships. But then the question has to be asked, what does a biblical friendship look like? And what are practical lessons that the Bible gives us on friendships? Well, I think that we can learn the answers to these questions from 1 Samuel chapter 20, because this chapter will exemplify to us what a loyal friendship, what a biblical friendship, what a good friendship looks like. And what I've done is pull as many lessons on friendship that I could find from the chapter, so I found 15. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you my outline for the chapter, and then spread out through this outline, I'm going to put the lessons on friendship that we find on the screen so you can write them down. But before we get to our outline, just to give you some context on where we're at in the book, you need to understand that this chapter marks a new stage in David's life, which will continue until the end of the book. From now on, David will be a fugitive from Saul. David is going to be running away the entire rest of the book from Saul. And so this chapter tells us how it is that he became a fugitive, when he became a fugitive, why he became a fugitive. Those are the answers that this chapter gives us. And so the chapter, to answer these questions, to show us how he became a fugitive, the chapter gives us two faces which formulate David's plan of escape. And so let's begin with phase number one. Phase number one, and it is this, coming up with a plan. Coming up with a plan. Look at verse 1 with me. It says, then David fled from Naoth in Ramah and came and said to Jonathan, what have I done? What is my iniquity? And what is my sin before your father that he is seeking my life? Now stop there. Remember the context. David he's escaping from Saul. And so far in the book, 9 times it's been repeated that Saul is trying to kill him. And so the point is, this is the real deal. And so David he's seeking out help. He needs help and wisdom and peace. And so he goes to his best friend to find it. And that gives us our first lesson on friendship, and it is this. Friendship lesson number one. Friendships provide someone to fall on, a help when we are in need, a buffer when we are knocked down. And I know that's long. You can write it in your own words. And I want you to read Ecclesiastes 4, 9, and 10. Don't worry. I'm going to come back to this slide. If you're not done writing it down, just read this with me. It says, two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. For if either of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls when there is not another to lift him up. So blessed is he who has friends in time of need, but woe to the one who falls down and there's no one to help him get back up. And you have to understand, guys, yes, our ultimate friend is God. Our ultimate friend is Christ, and he is the one in whom we place our trust. But you got to understand, part of God strengthening us is him providing the means to do so. And part of the means by which he strengthens us is with the community he gives us, with the church, with our friends. And David understood that. And that is why he goes to Jonathan. And so, that's lesson number one. David goes to Jonathan and he says this. Read it again, verse 1. It says, what have I done, he says. What is my iniquity and what is my sin before your father that he's seeking my life? Why does he want to kill me, he's saying. And then Jonathan responds in verse 2. He said to him, far from it. You shall not die. Behold, my father does nothing, either great or small, without disclosing it to me. So why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so. So Jonathan seems to be unaware that Saul he's still trying to kill David. And most likely that is because the last thing he heard from Saul is in last chapter in verse 6 where it says that Saul listened to the voice of Jonathan and Saul vowed, as the Lord lives, he shall not be put to death. So Jonathan is trusting his father. He's hoping that there's some ounce of integrity left in him. And so he just says to David, David, he tells me everything he's going to do. There's no way this is going on. It is not so, he says. And then David responds in verse 3. Yet David vowed again, saying, your father knows well that I have found favor in your sight. And he has said, do not let Jonathan know this, or he will be grieved. So he's saying, listen, Jonathan, I know you trust your father, but listen, your father wants me dead. He hasn't told you because he knows I'm your friend. Keep reading. And this is David's vow, by the way, meaning he's promising to be telling the truth. He says, but truly, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, there is hardly a step between me and death. He's being poetic. He's saying, listen, David, death pursues me like my own shadow. I walk on a thread above a precipice of death, and that death comes from the hand of your father. He wants me dead. He wants me dead. Verse 4. Then Jonathan said to David, whatever you say, I will do for you. Or in other words, I believe you, David. Tell me your plan and I will follow. And guys, this was Jonathan's motto motto, right? There you go. This was Jonathan's motto. His entire life with David, his entire life. He's constantly telling David, listen, you're going to be the king. It's like, I'm the heir of the throne, but no, you can have my crown because you are the truly anointed king of God and I will be there with you. I will not leave you. It almost sounds like Ruth with Naomi. Where you go, I'll go. Where you stay, I'll stay. I'm not leaving your side. Listen, David, my loyalty and allegiance is to you. That's what he's saying. And that gives us our second lesson on friendship. That is this. Deep friendships begin with you being a Jonathan instead of seeking a Jonathan for yourself. Guys, oftentimes we only think about ourselves and oftentimes we only want our friends to benefit us. And Jonathan was in a position where he could have done that. He's the prince after all. He is above David. And yet instead of that, he humbles himself to become David's servant. There's a preacher I heard a long time ago. I remember he was teaching seminary students, I believe, at a conference. And he told them, listen, you cry to God all the time. Use me, God, use me, use me. And he said, when you should be crying instead, use my roommate and let me carry his bags all the days of my life. What was he saying? As in saying, He's more gifted than me, so use me by allowing me to serve him so that his work for you could be expanded. Listen, I don't care how you use me, just be glorified. Unto you give the glory. Whoever you decide to use, even if that means I have to work behind the scenes the rest of my life. And this is exactly what Jonathan is doing here. He doesn't care about fame or honor or glory or riches or wealth. He just cares about the glory of God and the good of his friend. And he sees that he's a truly anointed king. And so he's like, it's as if, again, he's giving him his crown. It's like, you be the king. You be the king. And that leads us to our third lesson on friendship. Friendship is grounded in humility. Jonathan had the humility to lay aside his crown for the sake of God's glory and his friend's good. Now let's keep going. So Jonathan believes David and tells him that he will help him in whatever plan he comes up with. And therefore, in verse 5, we get David's ideas. David's ideas as in ideas to formulate a plan. What are they going to do since Saul wants to kill David? Look at verse 5. It says, so David said to Jonathan, behold, tomorrow is the new moon, and I ought to sit down to eat with the king. But let me go, that I may hide myself in the field until the third evening. If your father misses me at all, then say, David earnestly asked leave of me to run to Bethlehem, his city, because it is the yearly sacrifice there for the whole family. If he says it is good, your servant will be safe. But if he is very angry, know that he has decided on evil. So David says this, here's the plan. Tomorrow is a new moon festival for 3 nights. There's going to be a party, all right? And he's going to expect me to be there. Saul is going to be there. He's going to expect me to be there, but I'm not going to show up, all right? And when he asks you where I am, you're going to tell him that, hey, there's some family duties I had to do in Bethlehem. And if he's cool with it, then cool, man. I mean, I can go back. I'm not in danger. He doesn't want to kill me anymore. But if he gets angry, then we know that he still wants to kill me. That's the plan. And I want you to notice that David is trusting Jonathan a lot here. Because remember that they lived in a time where kings and heirs of the throne would just kill off the competition, all right? This is very strange what's going on here. This is such loyalty, guys. And he's just trusting Jonathan that he's not going to turn on him, all right? And that gives us our fourth lesson on friendship, and it is this. Friendship is built on trust and transparency. So grounded on humility and built on trust and transparency. So David is trusting Jonathan with his life. And by the way, the fact that he is, in a sense, revealing the secrets of the truth of what Saul wants to do to him backs up Jesus' definition of friendship in John 17, where he says to his disciples this. He says, Jesus says this, you are my friends because I have disclosed these things, the truth, to you. And so he's saying this. Jesus is defining in that passage friendship as a true friend is someone that you can trust to keep your secrets and someone that you open up your secrets to. So you're transparent and trustworthy. That's a friend. So David gives Jonathan his plan and trusts him. And then look at what he says in verse 8. Verse 8. When I say look at what he says in verse 8, I mean look at what he says in verse 8. Verse 8. Therefore, deal kindly with your servant. Or in other words, help me in this plan, Jonathan. For you have brought your servant into a covenant of the Lord with you. Remember, a covenant is an unbreakable promise, a binding agreement. Keep reading. But if there is iniquity in me, meaning if I break this covenant, if I have broken this covenant, put me to death yourself, he says. For why then should you bring me to your father? Oftentimes, when covenants were broken in the Old Testament, that meant death for the guilty party. And so that's why David says this. And you may ask, well, what is this covenant they're talking about? Well, I think that the context would tell us that there are three aspects to this covenant. First of all, this covenant was a promise to be loyal to each other and to protect each other and each other's generations. We're going to see this at the end of the chapter when Jonathan asks David to show the loving kindness of God to his generations. Meaning, when you become king, don't kill off the competition. Don't kill me and don't kill my children, basically, he's saying. Secondly, this is a covenant where Jonathan promises to relinquish the throne for David, the true king, and to inform David if Saul wants to kill him. And then thirdly, it may be that Jonathan, out of loyalty to his father, asks David not to kill Saul. That may be one part of the reason why David refuses to kill Saul the rest of this book. He's unwilling to touch the Lord's anointed, he says. Most likely because Jonathan could have told him, hey, you're the king. My father is not going to be the king. That means he's going to die. Let God be the one who kills him, not you. And so he says, in a sense, a covenant is him saying, listen, I will give you my throne, David. I will vow my life to you, David. Just don't kill me. Don't kill my father. Don't kill my children. And if you do that, you got a deal. That's the plan. And guys, even though we don't make covenants like these very often with our friends, the idea of this covenantal friendship teaches us a fifth lesson on friendship, and that is this. Friendship is based on loyalty, a covenant of faithfulness, a covenant, as it were, of faithfulness that cannot be broken. You know, I have heard that the worst pain that someone can suffer in this world is disloyalty, and that at the same time, the greatest earthly blessing is loyalty. And interestingly, as I was studying for this passage, I came to the realization that my favorite series or stories or movies all have this same theme in common, and that is loyalty. Loyalty. Think of the Lord of the Rings, for example. It's like someone has to take the ring and take it to Mordor and destroy it, but no one's willing to do it. So Frodo steps up to the task, but he cannot do it without the fellowship of the ring, his friends. And then Frodo gives up, and who steps up? Samwise Gamgee. And so he carries Frodo up the mountain, and it's like, man, I want to cry every time I watch that scene. Why? Loyalty. 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 I love it. It's beautiful. That's the type of loyalty that says, I will be there for you. I will help you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. And Jesus says that, by the way, which shows you who the greatest friend in this world is. This is the loyalty that sticks closer than a brother and that remains steadfast in the best of times and in the worst of times. Back to the Lord of the Rings, there's a point where Elrond says that it may have been a bad idea to embark on the journey because of the troubles up ahead. And Gimli says this, just listen. He says, faithless is he that says farewell when the road darkens. That's good. That is good. Faithless is he, a traitor is he who leaves when things get hard. Listen, guys. Find friends who are loyal in the good times and in the bad times, and be that kind of friend. Let's keep going. So David tells Jonathan, if I have broken the covenant, kill me. And then Jonathan answers in verse 9. He says, far be it from you. Stop there. He's basically saying, what are you talking about, David? Like, don't talk like that. We'll be loyal. There's no way I'm going to kill you. And this almost sounds like a mild rebuke, which, by the way, gives us our sixth lesson on friendship. And it is this. True friends will correct you when you need to be corrected. Proverbs 27:6 says this. Don't worry, I'll go back to the last slide. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. Meaning, your true friends will wound you in their love for you. Faithful are the wounds of a friend in contrast to the flattery of the enemy. True friends will tell you the truth. True friends will correct you. An enemy will tell you just what you want to hear. So, you got to understand, guys. I would encourage y'all to get friends whom you can go to and you can say, listen, obviously, I need to grow. I need to grow. And so every time you see me sin, that I'm in a sinful pattern, every time you see me acting dumb, messing up, going astray, whatever it is, correct me. Tell me. And I promise you, I'm not going to get mad. You need to have friends like that. Have you ever said that to any of your friends? And you need to be that kind of friend to your friends. Otherwise, you're not a true friend. So Jonathan says, verse 9, Go back to it. Far be it from you, for if I should indeed learn that evil has been decided by my father to come upon you, then would I not tell you about it? So he's reassuring David of his loyalty. He's saying, I'll follow your plan and I'll tell you if my father still wants to kill you. Verse 10. Then David said to Jonathan, who will tell me if your father answers you harshly? As in saying, wait a second, okay, this plan is going well, but who's going to inform me if he actually gets mad? How are you going to tell me if you're in the palace and I'm hiding somewhere? And so they're basically formulating this plan on the spot, and David's out of ideas, and therefore we now come to Jonathan's ideas. Jonathan's ideas. 11, it says, Jonathan said to David, come and let us go out into the field. So both of them went out to the field. Then Jonathan said to David, the Lord, the God of Israel, be witness. Now stop there. Jonathan is about to finish the plan, but something that I want you to notice is that throughout everything he says, he mentions the name of Yahweh at least 9 times, meaning that his mind is consumed with the God of the Bible and with his glory. And David is exactly the same, which leads us to our 7th lesson on friendship, and it is this. Friendship is established on having the same convictions, particularly seen in ultimate loyalty to Yahweh. So not only humility and not only trust and not only loyalty, but having the same convictions built on loyalty to God. If you have these 3 foundations, guys, or was it 3 or 4? It may have been 4. These 4 foundations. You will have a biblical friendship. And when it comes to having the same convictions, think, for example, of Daniel and his 3 friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, right? In Daniel 3, they're in front of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar tells them to bow down to the idol, and all of them, none of them bow down. And they tell him, God can deliver us, and even if he doesn't, we're still not bowing down. It's like their loyalty to God, their convictions on God is what glued their friendship. Convictions grounded on loyalty to God. That is exactly the kind of friendship that David and Jonathan had. Now let's see what else Jonathan says in verse 12. Then Jonathan said to David, the Lord, the God of Israel, be witness. When I have sounded out my father about this time tomorrow or the 3rd day, behold, if there is good feeling towards David, shall I not then send to you and make it known to you? If it please my father to do you harm, may the Lord do so to Jonathan and more also. He's speaking in 3rd person, being poetic. If I do not make it known to you and send you away, that you may go in safety. So he's essentially binding himself under the judgment of God if he does not inform David if his dad wants to kill him. Keep reading, end of verse 13. And may the Lord be with you as he has been with my father. Again, this is full assurance that David is the one that's going to be king. Now notice verse 14. He says, if I am still alive, will you not show me the loving kindness of the Lord that I may not die? You shall not cut off your loving kindness from my house forever. Not even when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth. He's saying, promise me, David. You won't kill me. You won't kill my children once you become king. Once all your enemies are killed, and that's talking about Saul. And it's interesting here, guys. I think that this passage shows that Jonathan understood a lot more than what was happening in the present time, because he says, you will show your loving kindness forever. Not even when the Lord cuts off every one of the enemies of David from the face of the earth. It's like, what is he talking about? Forever? Every one of your enemies? His only enemy is Saul right now. And so there's one sense in which Jonathan is looking into the future, and he's looking forward to the time when the ultimate David, the ultimate king, the true David comes, Christ, and God destroys all of his enemies from the face of the earth, the entire world. All the wicked will be killed. And then he will reign forever. And so, again, it goes back to that idea of his convictions being grounded on loyalty to God. His loyalty to David, his friendship to David, is grounded on his loyalty ultimately to God. In Christ, who's going to fulfill this? Who's going to come and reign forever? I like that. Verse 16. So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, "May the Lord require it at the hands of David's enemies." Jonathan made David vow again because of his love for him, because he, Jonathan, loved him, David, as he loved his own life. And in these words, we have a picture of the deepest friendship in the Old Testament, not with God and not with a spouse, but just between two friends. 1 Samuel 18:1 says that the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as himself. And with that, I'm going to give you the eighth lesson on friendship, and it is this. The deepest friendship in the Old Testament is described as loving a friend as oneself, having two souls knit together. Guys, we will have a lot of friends in this life, but this reality can only be true with very few people. Proverbs 18:24 says this, "A man of too many friends comes to ruin." And the idea there is that if everyone is your friend, then no one is your friend. Watch out and be careful that you only hang out with groups of people and you never really get close to any of them. Because a man of many friends will come to ruin. You really don't have friends. Are you cultivating these types of friendships? And I don't think that this type of friendship being knit together in that way, I don't think that applies only to David and Jonathan. I think that every single one of you should have a friendship, at least one friendship like these. Anyways, I think the fact that Jonathan is not only willing to give his kingdom for David, but also to die for David, going through this plan, gives us a ninth lesson on friendship. Friendship requires sacrifice. Jesus said this in John 15:13, "Greater love has no one than this, that one laid down his life for his friends." So he's saying self-sacrifice is the greatest expression of love there is. And certainly that applies to literally dying in the place of your friends, or it applies to laying down your crown for the sake of the anointed king. But I think most of the time it applies to you in more practical ways. So for example, maybe sacrificing your time, sacrificing your effort, sacrificing your energy, sacrificing your sleep, your fun, your money, whatever it is to serve your friend. It is doing whatever it is, dying to self so that you can be a blessing to your friends. That's a true friendship, and that's what Jonathan does. Verse 18, "Then Jonathan said to him," here's a plan, David, basically. "Tomorrow is a new moon, and you will be missed because your seat will be empty. When you have stayed for 3 days, you shall go down quickly and come to the place where you hid yourself on that eventful day. And you shall remain by the stone, Essek. I will shoot 3 arrows to the side, as though I shot at a target. And behold, I will send the lad, saying, 'Go, find the arrows.' If I specifically say to the lad, 'Behold, the arrows are on this side of you, get them,' then come. For there is safety for you and no harm as the Lord lives. But if I say to the youth, 'Behold, the arrows are beyond you,' go, for the Lord has sent you away. As for the agreement of which you and I have spoken, behold, the Lord is between you and me forever." So he's saying this is how I'm going to communicate with you if Saul still wants you dead. You go hide in the woods and I'm going to be doing archery and I'm going to throw my arrow and you're going to be in the woods listening to whatever I have to say, and then I'm going to tell my servant to go find the arrow, and if you hear me scream out, "Is it not right next to you?" then that means you're good. You can still come. Saul doesn't want you dead anymore. But if I say, it's further from you, go beyond that, something like that, that means you need to run away because he still wants to kill you. And so that's the plan. That's the plan. And I want you to notice the wisdom of Jonathan. I mean, he's formulating this master plan so that no one, not even his servant, finds out what's going on. And that teaches you a tenth lesson on friendship. And it is this: having wisdom depends on the kind of friends you have. So does folly, by the way. You cannot be wise without certain friends, according to the Bible. Proverbs 13:20 says this: "He who walks with the wise will be wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm." So what's that saying? It's saying wisdom, a good application from this is that wisdom depends on the types of friendships you have. Proverbs 22:24-25 says, "Do not associate with a man given to anger, or go with a hot-tempered man, or you will learn his ways and find a snare for yourself." Notice that. So he's saying the person you will become in the future is dependent on the friends you have now, because your friends will shape you and mold you. Anyways, so the plan of escape is complete. Let's look now at our second phase to know how it unfolds. Carrying out the plan. Carrying out the plan. Look at verse 24. It says, "So David hid in the field. And when the new moon came, the king sat down to eat food. The king sat on his seat as usual, the seat by the wall. Then Jonathan rose up, and Abner sat down by Saul's side. But David's place was empty. Nevertheless, Saul did not speak anything that day, for he thought, 'It is an incident. He is not clean. Surely he is not clean.'" Sounds a little paranoid to me. 27. "It came about the next day, the second day of the new moon, that David's place was empty. So Saul said to Jonathan, his son, 'Why has the son of Jesse not come to the meal, either yesterday or today?' Jonathan then answered Saul, 'David earnestly asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem. For he said, please let me go, since our family has a sacrifice in the city, and my brother has commanded me to attend. And now, if I have found favor in your sight, please let me get away that I may see my brothers. For this reason, he has not come to the king's table.'" And, by the way, just to add somebody told me one time that I needed pictures in my presentation, otherwise it would be boring, so that's how it would have. Here's a hyper-realistic picture of how it would have looked like. All right, how does Saul respond? Verse 30. "Then Saul's anger burned against Jonathan." So Saul becomes extremely mad. He becomes furious. He's furious. He's so angry that it says it burned up inside of him. It's like he's a volcano ready to explode, and he does explode because look at what he says to him. He says, "You son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do I not know that you are choosing the son of Jesse to your own shame and to the shame of your mother's nakedness?" Whew. He's mad, and he's showing his true colors to Jonathan. And he even insults his wife. It's like, what did she ever do to him? Sounds like he's not a very romantic guy. And by the way, notice how he calls Jonathan the son of a perverse and rebellious woman, when the reality is that he was the son of a perverse and rebellious man. And then in verse 31, he gives Jonathan the reason for his anger. And in doing so, he also presents a temptation to Jonathan. 31, Saul says, "For as long as the son of Jesse lives on the earth, neither you nor your kingdom will be established." So he says to Jonathan, "Jonathan, don't you get it? Jonathan, you are my son, and my son will one day be king. And the only way that that will happen is if David dies." So he's trying to coerce him. He's appealing to Jonathan's greed for riches and power. Same temptation that Satan presented, by the way. "Bow down to me and I'll give you the kingdoms of the world." Saul is saying, "Bow down to my kingdom and one day it will be yours." And then he finishes with a command. Look at the end of verse 31. "Therefore now, send and bring him to me, for he must surely die." Wow. Someone says, So Saul explodes out of nowhere, and then he tries to put himself back together and earn the heart of his son again. And so he says, my son, you will be king. If that's going to happen, David has to die. And you, my son, you know where he's at. You're his best friend. He trusts you. So go get him and bring him to me. And you have to think, guys, of the heaviness and perhaps temptation that Jonathan felt is in his own heart. I mean, this is his own father telling him this. Imagine if your dad was telling you this. What is he going to do? And all Jonathan had to do, was go outside, throw an arrow, say, "Hey, it's right next to you," and David would have trusted him. David would just come back to the palace to his death. And so Jonathan has a choice to make, his family and the throne or his friend. Surely he was tempted. Surely he was broken inside. Surely he felt shame before his father. Surely he felt a pull towards having the kingdom. So what does he choose? Verse 32. But Jonathan answered Saul, his father, and said to him, "Why should he be put to death? What has he done?" Essentially, he defends David. He defends his friend. He sticks to his conviction. He stays true to his covenant with David. And that leads us to our 11th lesson on friendship. Friends defend each other. Friends defend each other. And when that happens, oftentimes you create enemies. Because look at what Saul does in verse 33. It says, "Then Saul hurled his spear at him to strike him down." Ha. So it goes from this to this. And essentially, Saul is saying, "You've chosen your side, Jonathan. That's fine with me. Now all I have to do is get rid of you too." Let me say something, guys, that may be a little shocking. Most people are friends like Saul. Most people are friends like Saul. Most friends are friends to others so long as they are useful to them. Most people see others as tools to use or obstacles to their dreams and aspirations. And so if you're not useful to me, I'll just get rid of you or I'll just ignore you. If you're not a benefit to me, you're not my friend. That's the way Saul is acting. And that gives us our 12th lesson on friendship. Biblical friendship is covenantal, not consumeristic. Covenantal friendship is the one that says, "I am with you in the good times and in the bad times." And consumeristic friendship says, "If you won't be a tool to me for my goals and my kingdom, I just won't talk to you. You won't be my friend." Saul was building his kingdom, and anybody who was an obstacle to him had to be exterminated, whether it was David or the priests in the next chapter that we're going to study, or his own son, or God. That's the way he lived his entire life. I keep going at the end of verse 33. Saul tries to kill Jonathan, and then it says, "So Jonathan knew that his father had decided to put him to death. Then Jonathan arose from the table in fierce anger and did not eat food on the second day of the new moon, for he was grieved over David because his father had dishonored him." And in this moment, guys, his friendship with his father had been broken, which gives us another lesson on friendship. And it is this: friendships can end if convictions are abandoned. Friendships can end if convictions are abandoned. Listen, true friendship never says, "Hey, I love you so much that you can sin and sin and sin and break all your convictions and hey man, you're good. I've still got your back." No, that's not a true friend. A friendship can end. There are types of friendships when you will have to break loyalty to them because it's their fault, because they cost it. A good illustration of this is I've heard stories of people committing adultery, let's say, and then they say to their friends, "Listen, I'm done. I'm done with God. I'm done with my spouse. I'm done with this friendship." It's like those friends, that friendship is over because their convictions have been shattered. But then at the same time, let's say that person who sins in that way, let's say they're truly repentant and let's say they want restoration, then that is the opportunity for his friends to come alongside him and love him and work with him until he's restored. But that's not at all what Saul is showing here. He's not repentant. Now verse 35. Jonathan knows now that Saul wants to kill David, so he continues with the plan. It says, "Now it came about in the morning that Jonathan went out into the field for the appointment with David, and a little lad was with him. He said to his lad, 'Run, find now the arrows which I am about to shoot.' As the lad was running, he shot an arrow past him. When the lad reached the place of the arrow which Jonathan had shot, Jonathan called after the lad and said, 'Is not the arrow beyond you?'" Remember, David is hiding. He's waiting to hear. And so he's basically telling him, David, run away, run away. And I bet he would have said this with tears in his face, because he would have been shattered. It's like he's losing his best friend in a sense. 38, and Jonathan called after the lad, hurry, be quick, do not stay. And Jonathan's lad picked up the arrow and came to his master. But the lad was not aware of anything. Only Jonathan and David knew about the matter. And I want you to notice here, guys, the intentionality in everything that Jonathan is doing to help David. So let me give you the 14th lesson. Friendship requires intentionality. Friendship requires intentionality. Jonathan has risked his life for David. He has served David. He has created this plan to help David. He's very intentional in everything he does. And that teaches you that these kinds of friendships can only be built through intentionality. Through intentionality. It requires, these kinds of friendships, guys, require time. It requires you thinking, okay, I'm going to text this person. I'm going to call this person. This is how I'm going to encourage this person. You don't just, listen, the types of friendships where you see your friend once a year, those friendships don't grow very deep. You need to be intentional. When are we going to hang out? How am I going to encourage them? What are we going to do to build up our friendship and our convictions in the Lord together? You don't just hang out, again, once a year and boom, you're best friends forever. It's intentionality, intentionality. And by the way, if I may just say, intentionality in picking the right people. Picking the right people to be friends with. You don't just show up at school and, hey, the first person that talks to you, hey, my best friend. No, you pick the right friends. You pick your friends. One of my favorite stories of intentionality in friendships is the story of the paralytic and Jesus, right? When he has to be hung from the roof in a sense. The roof, they have to break through the roof so that he can come to Jesus, right? Every single time we hear that story, we probably always focus on Jesus and the paralytic, but have you ever stopped to contemplate the intentionality of the paralytic's friends? It's like they are going so far to get his friend to where he has to be, and then they arrive at the house where Jesus is at, and it's packed. And do they just say to their friend, hey, sorry, there's no way to get in. Sorry, buddy, maybe next time. No, they're like, listen, we're getting you in because we're getting you in, even if we have to break through the roof. Wait a second. And then they do that. That's intentional friendship. That's the kind of friend you need to be. Verse 40. Then Jonathan gave his weapons to his lad and said to him, go bring them to the city. When the lad was gone, David rose from the south side and fell on his face to the ground and bowed three times. This is basically their farewell. This is a tragic scene. David has no words. They're meeting each other in the woods, and this is their farewell. He's about to run away, and he has nothing to say. He just bows down before Jonathan to show honor and respect. And then it says, and they kissed each other. This was a kiss on the cheek. This was very common back then as a way to show respect and to greet someone or to say goodbye. And furthermore, keep reading in verse 41, they wept together, but David wept the more. And they're weeping here because never again will they get to enjoy their friendships, their friendship as they once did. From this moment onward, David is on his own. Jonathan is going back to the palace. David's about to become a fugitive. They think they're never going to see each other again. So they weep because of the neverness of their relationship in the words of a preacher I've heard before. They're thinking, never again will we get to enjoy this friendship. Never again will we get to talk together. They didn't have phones back then. Never again will we get to ride into battle together and fight together. Never again. Never again. Michael Jordan won his first championship on Father's Day. And after he won, there are videos of him sobbing and sobbing on the gym floor because he said that his dad had passed away and he was just broken, that he could not enjoy that moment with his best friend, his dad. That's the type of idea here. They're sobbing because of the neverness of the moment. Never again, they think, they will never again see each other. And although this is not explicit in the text, I want to give you a 15th lesson on friendship. Friendship lesson number 15. Oftentimes, suffering creates the best of friends. And David and Jonathan clearly knew that. Listen, when you have a friendship where all you do is play video games and do trivial things, it's like that doesn't really build a good friendship. But when you tell your friend, listen, I'm about to die, and your friend says, well, I'll be with you every step of the way, man, those friendships last forever. Forever. And that's backed up also by the last verse, 42. It says, Jonathan said to David, go in safety, and as much as we have sworn to each other, in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord will be between me and you and between my descendants and your descendants forever. Then he rose and departed while Jonathan went into the city. So he's saying, my friend, even though we're apart, we will always be joined together by this covenant, and this covenant will last forever. Last Lord of the Rings illustration, and I'm done. All right, this reminds me of my favorite scene where you have Boromir. He's about to die. Boromir was an heir to the throne. He knows Aragorn is an heir to the throne too. He doesn't like Aragorn at one point very much, but then Boromir gives his life for the hobbits. He's about to die, and then Aragorn comes to him, and Boromir says this, I would have followed you anywhere. My brother, my captain, my king. Oh, it's so good. I love that scene, and it's because it shows friendship and loyalty and honor, and that's what this scene shows us, friendship and honor. And loyalty. This is what Jonathan is saying. I would have followed you anywhere. My brother, my captain, my king. I love that. Guys, you've been given by God an incredible opportunity to form the most beautiful, wonderful friendships that you could ever have right here at Youth Group. Don't waste that opportunity. Don't take that for granted. Be intentional in your friendships. Seek to be a Jonathan-like friend. And seek to have a Jonathan-like friend, that by God's grace, the joy that this kind of friendship gives could be yours. Pray with me. Thank you, Father, for friendships. They are your gift to us, your gift to us. We ask you, O Lord, that you would please provide these kinds of friendships to us, that we would love and serve each other. Give us humility. Give us service. Give us the heart of Jonathan. And help us to spend the rest of our lives also delighting in the friendship that we can have with you. In Jesus' name, amen.